Teach Homeschool Group, would they please stand? Would the students stand? And their friends and advisors and parents, too. Thank you. Good seeing you all. Please be seated. We have students here with some frequency. Many come with the Court with Class program that is sponsored by the State Bar and the Wisconsin Supreme Court. The students are invited to attend an oral argument, and if the invitation is accepted, they are sent the briefs of the case we are about to hear. And they may do a variety of activities connected with this case. In addition to what they do in their schools, they meet with a justice of this court at noon when the procedures of the court are discussed, not the substantive issues in this case. And you're all invited to join the students at the end of the second case. Let me, before I introduce the court, does anyone here need a synopsis, a summary of this case? Because we have some. Everybody have materials on the case? Okay. Well, let me introduce the court. On my far left is Justice Lewis Butler. Seated next to him is Justice David Prosser. To my immediate left is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my right is Justice John Wilcox. To his right is Justice Patrick Crooks. You will meet with Justice Crooks at noon. And on the far right is Justice Patience Robinsack. With those introductions made, I'll call our case 2004 AP 356, Glenn Rocker versus USAA Casualty Insurance Company. Timothy Tretchick will argue for 25 minutes on behalf of the plaintiffs, Mr. and Mrs. Rocker. We will then hear from Frederick Smith for 10 minutes on behalf of the USAA Casualty Insurance Company, and 15 minutes from Jacqueline Frakes, representing General Casualty, and then we'll have rebuttal in the following order, Mr. Smith and then Mr. Tressa. Everybody has agreed to that? Okay. Counsel, you may proceed.
May it please the court, the counsel. My name is Tim Tretchick. I represent Glenn and Teresa Rocker in this case. With me today is Glenn Rocker here. It was 12 and a half years ago on a beautiful May afternoon that my law school class was sworn in to practice law before the Supreme Court. And as the justices walked out to the bench, I turned to my classmate beside me and said, "It's raining out." She said, "What are you talking about? It's beautiful." I said, "It's raining out." She said, "It's not raining out, it's beautiful out." I said, "It's raining out." There, we're done. Now we can both say we've argued in front of the Supreme Court. Save me 12 and a half years, and it, I just want to say it's a privilege and an honor to finally legitimately be able to say I will have argued before the Supreme Court. This case is...
We're all going to remember that and use it in there. Okay.
The crux of this case is the question of whether or not Octopus Car Wash is a motor vehicle handler under Statute 632.32.2b. If it is a motor vehicle handler, then General Casualty's exclusion is invalid, and they must provide coverage to Cousins to the full extent of the policy limits. Our position, obviously, is that the car wash is a motor vehicle handler because it is a, quote, service station under 632.32.2b3. The goal of statutory interpretation is to discern the intent of the legislature. And the first thing a court does in interpreting a statute is look at the plain meaning, the plain language. Service station is not modified in any way in 632.32. It is only describing one type of motor vehicle handler. Therefore, the plain meaning service station is a place whose business is to provide service to a motor vehicle. That is its plain meaning. This is consistent with the dictionary definition. We cite the Merriam-Webster 10th edition that defines service station as a retail station for servicing motor vehicles, especially with gasoline and oil, a place at which some service is offered.
Tell me the history of this was, I can say that because of my gray hair, but my service station recall is that you came into a station, someone came out and asked you, fill her up, they washed your windshield, they checked your tires, you might have checked your oil. Does that make any difference? That's when this definition was the concept of a service station?
Well, I think it's important to look at. I think it's important, though, that the legislature did not say gas station. They said service station.
So you could have gotten air in your tires, you could have gotten your windshield washed, given a tip, and driven away without getting any gas, right?
Absolutely.
Or not even have given a tip.
That's right. And that is, when you look at what General Casualty is arguing in this case, they are saying, well, the legislature said service station, but they really meant gas service station. And to make that argument, we have to assume, well, the legislature, I guess, didn't know they could say that. Well, they did know they could say that because they say it in other sections. And we cited Section 66.1131D, where the legislature uses gasoline service station. Section 77.9941, where the legislature uses gasoline service station. So when the legislature intends gasoline service station, they know how and have done it, used the word gasoline service station.
Counsel, why didn't you make somewhat of a context-type argument? I mean, if you look at the definition of motor vehicle handler in 632.32(2), it breaks it down, a dealer, a lessor, rental company, repair shop, service station, storage garage, or public parking place. Now, if I read that all together, what it's telling me is that people who are dealing with cars, you didn't really kind of make that argument, but that's kind of the gist of how I see the statute. Am I missing something?
No, I don't think you're missing anything, and that's the secondary way to look at it beyond plain meaning is you look at the case, what the guidance of the case law gives us, and what are they intending to do. And I did argue in the Court of Appeals that when you look at what is set forth in the statute, it is all locations where they are handling a motor vehicle, where they are servicing a motor vehicle, and where control or operation for at least a short time is given over by the owner to the facility, which is consistent with all the things specifically laid out in 632.32 and is consistent with what occurs at the Octopus Car Wash in this case.
Counsel, if I look at these words, car wash and service station, and think of what the legislature intended when the legislation was enacted by use of service station. You make the point, you know, they didn't say gasoline service station, and they could do that. They did that in other places in the statute. Well, the response is they didn't say car wash either, you know. So, given the time period when this was enacted, my sense is that a good argument is made that they didn't intend a car wash, that by the use of the term service station. If you look at the meaning of the word service station today, given the historical perspective that Justice Wilcox set forth, you know, and he's an honorable guy, and although I don't remember what he's talking about, I believe it's probably...
No. Worth a try.
That's not my question. My question, though, is, so I'm kind of reticent, you know. Is a car wash a service station? I mean, if you ask these students here, their parents say, hey, take the car to the service station, Do you think they're going to say, oh, that meant that Dad said take it to the car wash? Could or could not. It's, you know, but maybe you're saved, and the argument you advance is, look, 632.32 is remedial and liberal construction. Now, that's one of – expand on that argument, because for me, that may have some weight, because I have difficulty saying a car wash is a service station.
And I agree with you. And I am not here to argue that the court should rule the blanket statement that all car washes are service stations, because they're not. Nor are all gasoline stations service stations. And I think your point is well taken, which is if you go into a bay that has one soap and water hose and one water hose and you wash your car, that's not a service station, because you are not, as I answered to Justice Butler, giving up control of your vehicle for work to be done by an employee of a facility. So hopefully I'm answering your question, which is I don't hold that all car washes are service stations. I'm saying that all car washes are set up and work the way the Octopus Car Wash in this case did, where a customer comes, hands the keys and car over to an employee of the car wash who does a service on the car, washes the windows inside and out, does tire dressing, whatever he or she may do, runs the car through the conveyor belt. Another employee gets into that vehicle and drives that vehicle to a separate location where more services are done there. It's dried, and again, the windows are clean. That's what I'm saying is a service station. So are there car washes where someone goes, pays the attendant who comes out, he writes on the windshield number 6, you go through that conveyor belt, come out, and never give up control of your automobile? I don't believe that would be a service station. And I think that is in line with what the legislature intended when they laid out certain things and stated service station as one of them.
Also, do the facts here show that at the time that this accident occurred, this particular car wash had gas pumps, or there was any changing of oil or anything of that nature going on at this location?
Nothing like that going on at this location, Your Honor. Right. The only operation and control that the employee took was to put the car in the conveyor belt, take the car off the conveyor belt, and dry it to take it to the drying area, which is what was occurring when the accident occurred.
Counsel, you said something that kind of was disconcerting to me. I certainly remember what I would call a service station that involved gasoline and repair of automobiles and a car wash that I drove through. If something happened at that car wash, would you say that wasn't a service station?
Well, no, I think that would be a service station, because at that facility, you give up the operation of your vehicle to an employee.
No, it would be. I didn't give up the operation.
You're saying during your car wash.
You know, right through.
I don't, that would be an interesting issue, because I think it would be a service station when you give up the control of your vehicle to do oil changes, to do whatnot. But with you going through the car wash, it becomes a much closer call.
Can I follow up Justice Prosser's question? Because one of the things that happens at the old style, and I tried to describe service station to my clerk yesterday, and she looked in shock and awe. She had no idea what I was talking about. But what used to happen at a service station, gas station, you would drive in, park, the attendant would come out and fill up your tank, check your oil, wipe down. You didn't necessarily give up control of your vehicle. You maintained control of the vehicle. They just kind of worked on it while you were there. So I'm not sure that the control, lack of control, really is a valid distinction.
Well, and maybe control was a misuse of words. Maybe it's use. And because in that situation where someone isn't getting in the car, it would be hard to imagine how something could happen. Maybe you leave it neutral. They press on the window too hard when they're drying it, and it runs into something. But your point is well taken. Does 632.32.6a apply to the general casualty policy is really the next issue of what I wanted to talk to. And in the scope section of that, the scope set forth in 632.32.1 clearly establishes, quote, except as otherwise provided, this section applies to every policy of insurance issued or delivered in the state against the insured's liability for loss or damage resulting from accident caused by any motor vehicle, whether the loss or damage is to property or to a person. Now, again, General Casualty wants us to read that and add words to the statute. General Casualty argues that where the legislature wrote, this section applies to every policy, they advocate that they really meant, the legislature really meant, it only applies to every auto policy, again, requiring the court to add words to the statute. And, again, the Cavey case, Cavey's 229 with second 111, says that when an interpretation requires the court to add words to a statute, it's something it cannot do. In regard to analyzing what every policy means, I draw it akin to what this court decided in the Bindrum case. In the Bindrum case, the Supreme Court looked at 632.32.6b1, which set forth, quote, no policy may exclude from the coverage afforded or benefits provided persons related by blood, marriage, or adoption to the insured. This is the case where the insured had an SR-22 policy pursuant to the financial responsibility statute. In that decision, the court held, quote, no policy means no policy. It does not mean no policy except named operators' coverage for non-owned vehicles' policies, nor does it mean no policy except policies that comply with the financial responsibility statutes. Similarly, when the scope of 632.32.1 states it applies to every policy, that means every policy, auto policies and CGL policies. This was decided in the Heritage case. There have been no changes to 632.32 since Heritage was decided in 2001. The Heritage case, of course, involved the officer of Wilbur's Truck World who takes a customer's vehicle to a meeting, has the meeting, on the way home from the meeting is involved in an auto accident. The court in the Heritage case found four relevant issues. One, Wilbur's Truck World was a motor vehicle handler. Two, Wilbur was an officer. Three, the Autodrivics were customers. And four, Wilbur was using a customer's vehicle at the time of the accident. For those reasons, the court found that 632.32.6a applied and the policy provided coverage, and that involved the CGL policy. Likewise, in this case, we have facts that are extremely similar to those four points. As a matter of fact, the same. Number one, Octopus Car Wash is a motor vehicle handler. Number two, Cousins was an employee of the car wash. Number three, Peretti was a customer of the car wash. And number four, Cousins was using a customer's car at the time of the accident. Therefore, in line with Heritage, this is covered by 632.32. I lastly want to spend a couple minutes talking about the Gorzowski decision.
But before you do that, 632.32 seems to impose certain requirements on a policy that is covered. Is there anything in 632.32 that isn't imposed on the general casualty policy that you're talking about?
Absolutely. And that argument was made by general casualty in front of the Court of Appeals, which is, well, if the CGL policy is governed by 632.32, it also says that we have to provide UM coverage. And now we're taking on risks that we never considered. And I don't think that's correct. I don't think it's a correct reading of 632.32. When you look at 632.32 and you look at the scope, number one, the scope said, except as otherwise provided, which is extremely important language, this section applies to every policy of insurance. Now, when we go down to the UM section, and again, I would argue that this is what's meant in the scope when it says otherwise provided, the UM section, which is number four, reads, quote, every policy of insurance subject to this section that insures with respect to any motor vehicle registered or principally garaged in this state. And it goes on to read. Now, a CGL policy does not insure a specific vehicle that is principally garaged in this state. So, therefore, our position is that although 632.32.1 would apply to a CGL policy and would fit on this case, they would not be required pursuant to 4 to offer and have UM coverage because the CGL policy was not insuring a specific vehicle housed or garaged in the state. So although the scope gives us the universe of policies, we then go to the language of otherwise provided, and that four then limits those policies to those that insure a specific vehicle. So, no, I think 632 can apply without requiring a CGL policy to provide UM coverage.
Do you think it's possible that a plaintiff's attorney might argue otherwise? I mean, if we accept your basic premise that 632 does apply to this policy, are we going to have someone come along in the future and say, oh, and it also includes uninsured motorist coverage?
I would never be so bold as to say never. I can tell you that I would never make that argument from the reading of 632.32.4. Was Gorzalski incorrectly decided? Yes. I think it was incorrectly decided. At the trial court level, counsel for general casualty, I think, all but admitted she thought Gorzalski was incorrectly decided. Because when the Honorable Donegan, Judge Donegan asked, well, to general casualty counsel, what about this issue with Gorzalski and it being a flawed decision and not appropriately applying 632.32, counsel for general casualty's response was, quote, if the Court of Appeals makes a mistake, that's something the Court of Appeals deals with, not Your Honor. We now are at a level where this Court can do something about a Court of Appeals decision that did not properly apply the law, and I look forward to hearing general casualty's stance before this Court as to whether or not Gorzalski was incorrectly decided.
I have to stop you, Mr. Tretchy. Is that the same thing as conceding that the Court of Appeals made error, or just saying, Judge Donegan, you don't have the power?
Well, in my opinion, and it goes to, I think it was interesting, my feel being in a trial court was echoed by the Court of Appeals cert to this court about where Judge Donegan found himself. I felt that in that hearing, Judge Donegan did believe that the car wash under these facts and circumstances was a service station and therefore a motor vehicle handler. And although he felt that way, he felt bound by the precedence of Gorzalski. That feeling that of me being present at the trial court was echoed in the court's cert where it said, quote, further, the trial court determined by implication that the car wash was a motor vehicle handler, but concluded that it was obligated to follow the precedent of Gorzalski. There was this issue of issue preclusion that came out in General Casualty's brief about this very important aspect of the case that should have been litigated from the start. But if it was so important and so critical, it wasn't ever referenced in the order. The order basically said that, pursuant to Gorzalski, we're going to find that they did properly exclude coverage here, and we're going to uphold the exclusion. If it was such a critical point, it should have been set forth in the order. And I think the reason that it wasn't pushed at the trial court level is because all counsel involved knew that Judge Donegan took issue with whether or not the car wash was a motor vehicle handler. Therefore, because, Justices, we propose that the car wash is a motor vehicle handler, General Casualty's fellow employee exclusion violates 632.32.6a, and they must provide coverage to the extent of the limits for the injuries sustained by Mr. Rocker. Now, obviously, I haven't spent any time on USAA's policy, and that's because I've believed strongly since the beginning of this case, and that the exclusion was improper. I think it's clear that if this court finds that the car wash is not a motor vehicle handler, then USAA's policy will need to provide coverage for Cousins' actions.
How much?
Excuse me?
To what?
To the extent of their limits.
And what's that?
I want to say it's $2.3 million, Your Honor.
Not $25,000 financial responsibility.
That's correct. And the only reason they got out at $25,000 is because at that point there was no other applicable insurance that would have provided coverage for Mr. Rocker's injuries. So the converse is true that if there is coverage, then USA's policy will be down to zero. So if there are no other questions, I will sit. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel, and you have 5 minutes in rebuttal. We'll now hear from Frederick Smith, representing USAA Casualty Insurance Company.
Thank you. May it please the Court, my name is Frederick Smith, and I represent the customers. auto insurer, the personal automobile insurer, in this case, USAA Casualty Insurance Company. This case is about responsibility shifting. The legislature has decided that risks involving operation of customer autos by businesses routinely engaged in the operation of customer vehicles should be shifted from the customer's insurer over to the motor vehicle handler's insurer. The phrase motor vehicle handler appears in four different subsections of Section 632.32. Interpreting what that definition means should involve looking at the use of that phrase in those four different subsections. It should also involve looking at the actual insurance policies and looking at the policy initiatives that the legislature was attempting to establish in those different subsections. Under Section 632.32.5b, personal auto insurers are permitted to reduce coverage to $25,000 when coverage is provided to the motor vehicle handler in the complete absence of other coverage for that motor vehicle handler, or to reduce coverage to $0 if the motor vehicle handler has valid and collectible insurance. A similar provision applies in a quid pro quo sense under Section 5C of that statute, where insurers for motor vehicle handlers are permitted to restrict coverage for others in a similar manner. 5C is not applicable in this case because the motor vehicle handler's employee was operating the vehicle. But the fact that the legislature enacted this quid pro quo should not be ignored. The most significant statute is 632.32.6A, which clearly and expressly prohibits insurers which issue policies to motor vehicle handlers from excluding coverages in any instance where a customer's vehicle is operated by an employee. That is exactly the situation that we have in this case. It makes complete sense. Why should any of us who own vehicles have to face the risk of increased premiums simply because we do business with companies that routinely handle our automobiles? Why shouldn't the motor vehicle handlers insurer have to absorb the risk of that liability when their employees are operating customer vehicles? The more narrow issue, which was touched upon by Mr. Tretrick in his fine presentation, was whether the Grozowski decision and the workers' compensation statutes can be read together in a reasonable and consistent manner.
Mr. Smith, before you get to that, how do you think we should define motor vehicle handler?
Well, the legislature has defined it, so we have to follow the legislature's definition. But I think that the term motor vehicle...
That leads us to service station, then?
I'm sorry?
You think that leads us to service station?
I think
that's the only one that fits within the legislature's definition.
I think that the term service station is broad. It should be interpreted in a broad fashion to include businesses which routinely handle motor vehicles owned by customers of those establishments. If you look at the term motor vehicle handler, that in itself suggests handling of motor vehicles. It suggests a specific activity. The legislature attempted to define motor vehicle handler by looking at the status of different companies, whether they're a dealership, whether they're a lessor, whether they're a public parking garage. But this court in the Spranger's decision said that insurance companies write coverage to risks and not to status. So I think that the phrase motor vehicle handler in itself suggests, it is self-suggestive as to what it means, and that service station should be interpreted in accordance with that broad remedial purpose behind the statute. And motor vehicle handler itself suggests a risk, it suggests an activity, the handling of the motor vehicle. The status of the person or the company, in my opinion, and given the Spranger's decision, is not that important. What we should be looking at is whether the business routinely engages in the operation, in the handling, in the servicing of customer motor vehicles. And if that's what's going on, then these statutes, the quid pro quo arrangement where you shift responsibility from the customer's insurer over to the motor vehicle handler's insurer, those policies will be furthered by interpreting the term service station consistently in that manner. With regard to Grozalski, the workers' compensation statutes permit a co-employee to sue another co-employee for liability for bodily injuries arising out of the use of a vehicle which is not owned by the employer. That falls under Section 10203, sub 2 of the statutes. When the vehicle happens to be a customer's vehicle, however, then all of the responsibility under Grozalski for bodily injuries to that co-employee falls on the customer's personal auto insurer, or if that customer has no insurance, on the co-employee himself. That's exactly what Grozalski does, and that's why it's a bad decision. It ignores the prohibition, the specific and clear prohibition of 632.32.6a, which is listed first in that subsection defining prohibitions against precluding coverage for motor vehicle handlers, employees, when they are operating customer vehicles. Cornell Cousins, Andrew Peretti, the customer, neither of these people should be obligated to risk higher insurance premiums because of the operation of a customer vehicle by the motor vehicle handler. I think another section that we should be looking at are the insurance policies themselves. For instance, the general casualty policy itself recognizes, specifically states, car washes as a type of business where liability arising out of an employee's use of a customer vehicle cannot be excluded. The USAA policy also refers to the activities involved in servicing a motor vehicle and defines coverage in that regard as well. Justice Bradley noted that this statute was enacted several years ago, and if you look at what gas stations do now, I go to the gas station and I can simply fill up my car without even talking to anybody that is employed at that gas station by simply using my credit card pay at the pump. I think what you need to realize is that over the years, perhaps the insurance industry that has been writing these policies to those risks involving handling of motor vehicles by handling of customer vehicles by motor vehicle handlers, they have perhaps given some insight into what they believe a motor vehicle handler really is by defining car washes and addressing car washes themselves specifically in these insurance policies. So I urge the court to apply a broad definition of service station in keeping with the remedial purpose of the statute for consistency in the business of insuring motor vehicle handlers and for the protection of customers like Andrew Peretti who have their vehicles operated by the motor vehicle handlers' employees. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Rakes? Franks? Rakes? Representing General Casualty.
Good morning, counsel. I'm Jacqueline Frakes, and I represent General Casualty Company of Wisconsin. Since the court's focus seems to be on what is a service station, I'll start there. The Court of Appeals in Binnen versus Great Northern Insurance Company stated at page 35 of 218 the second that the court has to look to all of the activities and services of the insured in determining whether or not it is a service station. If we look at the services provided by University Car Wash or Octopus Car Wash, strike that, let me back up. If you look at subsection 6A, subsection 6A states that no policy issued to a motor vehicle handler may exclude coverage upon any of its officers, agents, or employees when any of them are using motor vehicles. Using is described as defined under subsection 1 of 632, actually subsection 1C. Using includes driving, operating, manipulating, riding, in, and any other use. If we look at the services as listed in the plaintiff's appellant's brief at page 20 that University Car Wash provides, we have, number one, washing the vehicle. The vehicle is washed on a conveyor belt. There is no employee operating the vehicle or using the vehicle when the vehicle is being washed.
Counsel, let me just ask you, since I just took my car to car wash a couple weeks ago for its annual wash. As I drove up there, someone asked me what type I wanted. And then the next step was someone held up their hand and they said, you get out now, leave the keys in. The motor was either running or not running. And then they started to wash the car. They had this, they cleaned it out with a vacuum. They washed the car there. And especially they did, a pre-wash. Then they drove it. Because I think this is the way the operation that we're talking about. Then they drove it to the conveyor belt. But they had done servicing on it at that point. And I think that's rather standard. Then they drove it to the conveyor belt. Then they put it on there. And then about three-quarters of the way through the conveyor belt, somebody jumped in the car in the back end and they're cleaning. And then someone's in the, depending on the size of your car, they're in the trunk area, they're cleaning. You might be doing your mats. And then someone's in the driver and is driving the vehicle when it comes off the conveyor belt. So I found in your brief when you said a full-service car wash does not regularly handle motor vehicles, that seemed to defy what a normal understanding of when you take it to a full-service car wash. They do. They pre-wash it. I mean, that's been my experience for the past number of years as I've used different types of full-service car wash. So that when you say that, I didn't know exactly what you're talking about. You said there are only two occasions when they operate or drive, but the services that they're providing is that they're washing the car by hand, and it's not always automatic.
But the service of the washing of the vehicle, when they're outside soaping up your vehicle and washing it, they're not driving or operating your vehicle. The purpose of the omnibus statute is to ensure that, number one,
they're driving it from that point. I don't want to argue. I was just an observation. Then they drive it to the conveyor belt.
I understand, Justice Wilcox, and I acknowledge that with respect to University Car Wash or Octopus Car Wash, there are two instances where there's actually an employee in the car driving the vehicle. They drive it onto the conveyor belt and before the wash starts, and they drive it off of the conveyor belt into the drying area. Based on my understanding of the testimony, deposition testimony, in both of those situations, the customer is not present. The only ones present are employees. And the purpose behind the omnibus statute is to compensate victims of automobile accidents. This court in Dom versus Employers Mutual Liability.
Ms. Frakes, before you move off to there, I want to keep back on the service issue.
I'm still there.
because you've heard from Justice Wilcox, Justice Breyer, and a little bit from me. I know Justice Bradley's too young for this. You've heard a little bit of the description of what the gas stations used to do in contemplated as service stations. And what I'm hearing here today and what bothered me when reviewing the briefs is that the services offered by the car wash are exactly the services that were offered by the gas station to a degree. I mean, they did car washing. Justice Breyer talked about that. They cleaned the windshield. They worked on the vehicle. It seems as though the services are the same. They just moved to a different location.
Well, I have to disagree with you there, because if you look at the service stations of old, they also had mini garages where they would actually work on vehicles. They put the vehicles up, they'd work on transmissions, they'd do all kinds of work on the vehicle itself, which would have to entail them either driving the vehicle to test it to see what type of problem was going on with the vehicle, or after the repairs were made, driving the vehicle to see if the repairs were made correctly. And in fact, you brought up, Justice Butler, the context or the other terms surrounding service station in the statute, which I'm glad you did because I was going to get to that. If you look at those other terms, storage garage, public parking place, repair shop. Those are all businesses that are driving a vehicle from one location to another location, where there is a risk of injury or property damage to an innocent third party, a risk of basically that there's going to be some sort of an accident.
But in a public parking garage, it's not the employees of the public parking garage that don't necessarily touch the vehicle. There are a lot of public parking garages right down here in downtown Madison where you just drive in, take a little sticker, drive in, and park the vehicle yourself. You come out, you hand the sticker, and you pay.
Well, public parking place, well then, frankly, in that context, there wouldn't be a motor vehicle handler because the subsection 6A actually says that the employee has to be using the vehicle. If you go to...
We're talking about the definition of service station or the various... just looking at the definition of the statute, public parking garage, storage facilities, it seems to indicate the concept of who's handling the vehicle. And you're correct, if you're not handling the vehicle, you might not fall within the definition of such and such. So there seems to be a concept of handling, but also the broader definition of who's involved here. That's the only question I've got, is that you seem to be reading the statute very, very narrowly, when the statute seems to be somewhat inclusive.
I think if you look, though, at the statute itself, it says using the customer's vehicle, and using is defined within the statute as operating, manipulating, and when you look at the use of the terms public parking place, repair shop, storage garage, the legislature there used those terms because those are places where the vehicle is going to be used by an employee, namely driven, and there's some sort of risk of injury or accident to a person or to someone's property. The car wash in this case, the Octopus car wash, as I stated earlier, all of the services being offered, detailing services are normally done when the vehicle is in park. It's not even running, and there is no risk to any party of any injury. Washing windows, drying windows, those are all services that have nothing to do with the use of the vehicle. But when you look at repair shop, parking garages, storage garages, anywhere where you are turning your keys over to someone because that vehicle is going to be driven some distance, whether it be to a parking stall or across a parking lot or through a parking structure where there are a risk of some sort of injury or damage, then that's what the court is looking at when they look at the term service station.
Once again, if you look at service station and the concept that you advanced in your brief, of what a service station was. Sometimes an employee may handle the vehicle and drive it. Many times the employee didn't.
In the context of this particular car wash and car washes like Octopus Car Wash, there are only two instances where the employee is actually in the vehicle behind the wheel. That's driving it onto the conveyor belt and driving it off of the conveyor belt.
But I'm not talking about Octopus. I'm talking about the gas station. If you want to use the gas station analogy, Justice Wilcox said it best. They come out, they clean your windshield, they check the oil, they check the tires, they fill it up. You know, you didn't have to go out in the old days and fill up your own gas tank.
But
you never got behind the wheel of a car.
Service station, though, in the context of the omnibus statute, implies something more than washing windows or checking tires. It's automobile liability coverage. You have to be using the vehicle. And if a service station is using the vehicle in the context of a service station that also repairs vehicles, that means that they are going to be driving that vehicle. Again, driving a vehicle where there's a risk of injury to a person or property damage. If you're simply checking the tires, that doesn't mean, that doesn't entail use of the vehicle under the statute.
Counselor, since Mr. Rocker was injured when someone was driving the vehicle, how can you say that Octopus doesn't involve providing a service where you drive the vehicle?
Because in order to look at, when you look at the context of the omnibus statute and you're defining what a service station is,
right,
you can't look to a specific instance such as that and say, well, he was driving off of the ramp or the Conveyor belt. Conveyor belt, thank you. You know, a distance of 10 feet, and that is when the accident happened.
But how is that different?
Look at the whole context of the services that are provided.
And how is that different from when I give my car to a manned parking lot in Milwaukee or Chicago, and they give me a ticket, and they take my car, and they drive it 6 feet and put it in the stall? If they hit another employee while they're driving it those 6 feet, it seems to me it's not very different than hitting Mr. Rocker here, one employee hitting another employee. How is it different?
Well, I think it's different in the sense that you have to look at, again, the context of what the legislature meant by service station and how they grouped it in. And Octopus Car Wash, frankly, provides services to vehicles that do not involve use of the vehicle. And that brings me the fact that an employee was hit.
But if you have a gas station today, and there are still some stations that provide gas and do work on your car, there's one on University Avenue out by Brennan's where my husband gets his oil changed, and it's a gas station. He puts his own gas in it if he goes there, but the guys change his oil when it's time for him to change his oil. So it seems to me that's a service station, but all the things that are done there do not involve an employee doing something to the vehicle that's there. My husband puts his own gas in, pays with a credit card, never sees anybody.
And again, service station, though, when the legislature used the term service station, I believe the term service station has been within the omnibus statute for a period of time, and it meant something differently than your typical gas station today.
Yeah, I agree with that. I know that it's changed, but they haven't seen fit to change the definition in the statute.
If I could move on very quickly to the application of the omnibus statute to a commercial general liability policy, and I don't have much time left. If the omnibus statute is applicable to a commercial general liability policy or CGL policy, then all provisions of the omnibus statute are applicable. And contrary to the arguments of counsel, Attorney Trusick got up here and he cited Bindrum, and he says, well, Bindrum says no policy means no policy. And he said every policy means every policy. Well, let's look at subsection 4. Which is uninsured motorist and medical payments coverage. Every policy of insurance subject to this section that insures with respect to any motor vehicle registered or principally garaged in this state. Subsection 4 does not state every policy of insurance subject to this section that insures with respect to motor vehicles listed or enumerated in the policy. Attorney Trusick and the plaintiff's appellants are trying to add language here to the statute that simply does not exist. If this court finds that general casualty CGL policy is applicable to a customer's vehicle, and that vehicle is principally registered or garaged in the state of Wisconsin, then under the omnibus statute, it is required to provide UM coverage and medical payments coverage. If you look at subsection 4M, the underinsured motorist coverage, an insurer writing policies that insure with respect to a motor vehicle registered or principally garaged in this state. Again, it does not state registered with respect to motor vehicles listed or enumerated in the policy. If this court finds that general casualty CGL policy is applicable to a customer's auto, then they are required to notify University Car Wash that UM coverage is available under their general liability policy. Subsection 6B, which the number 1, which this court addressed in Bindrum, states no policy may exclude from the coverage afforded or benefits provided persons related by blood, marriage, or adoption to the insured. No policy means no policy. If this court finds that the CGL policy, that the omnibus statute, is applicable to general casualties policy, then they may not exclude from coverage under their commercial general liability policy benefits afforded to officers or agents or employees and their blood relatives or relatives related by marriage or adoption. You cannot pick and choose which subsections of the omnibus statute are applicable.
Oh, counsel,
Justice Prosser,
before you sit down, if I had all kinds of money and were so inclined and wanted to acquire a car wash, but being a socially conscious proprietor. I wanted to cover all of my employees against the kind of tragedy that occurred here. How do I do that? I deal with you. You're an outstanding company. How do I get this coverage? Because you seem to want to exclude, and so how do I get the coverage?
I think if you want auto coverage or coverage that is mandated by the omnibus statute, you purchase a business auto policy and you pay for that insurance. If this court holds that the omnibus statute is applicable to a CGL policy, you've turned that CGL policy into a business auto policy. And General Casualty and no insurance company who issues a CGL policy has obtained a premium for that type of coverage. If you want to cover the operation of a vehicle, liability coverage for an auto, you go out and you get a garage keeper's policy or you get a business auto policy. But you don't expect your premium for a simple commercial general liability policy to provide you with auto coverage.
Thank you. If I may.
There was an endorsement here, wasn't that? A specific endorsement on the CGL of General Casualty with regard, maybe I have this wrong, but with regard to the operation of a customer's vehicle?
There was a specific, actually it was, there was an endorsement which addressed an exception to an auto aircraft, watercraft exclusion in the policy. And basically it said that if you're using a customer's vehicle, let me get the specific language for you.
I thought it was entitled Operation of Customers' Autos on Particular Premises.
Correct. That is the title of the endorsement, and it specifically says that basically the aircraft, auto, or watercraft exclusion does not apply to any customer's auto while on or next to those premises you own, rent, or controlled that are used for any of the following businesses or service shops, and it does include car washes in that. Now, the coverage provided there is a very limited coverage, and it only is with respect to use of the customer's autos. However, if you apply the omnibus statute to the CGL policy, then you take it out of the context of this very limited exception to an exclusion, and you create a much broader coverage than was anticipated by this very limited exception to an exclusion.
If we would determine that this exception applies to this accident, how much insurance is available under the policy?
I'm sorry.
If we were to determine that this endorsement, which takes driving an automobile at a car wash out of the exclusion for automobile coverage, how much dollar amount of coverage is available under this policy?
Well, there's always $2.3 million available under both the underlying and the umbrella policy. But the issue in this case was the fact that there was a co-employee exclusion in this policy, which means that this coverage is not and never has been available when an employee injures another employee in the course of their employment. So this coverage is never available when there is an employee injuring another employee.
It's only available if a third party is injured? Is that all that the endorsement covers?
That's all the policy covers. The commercial general liability form and the umbrella form define an insured or exclude from the definition of an insured an employee who injures a co-employee while in the course of their employment. That language is unambiguous. It's been upheld by this court. Co-employee exclusions are upheld. They're valid. And but for the applicability of the omnibus statute to this policy, it's a valid exclusion.
Okay, so I'm still trying to get back to the endorsement that Justice Bradley brought up. That would only be operative if the employee were driving the vehicle and hit a third party, someone who was not employed by Octopus.
Correct.
That's what I was trying to find out.
And that issue really involves the Garzalski case. That's whether or not that co-employee exclusion is valid. That's what the argument is about.
Well, Gorzowski, the co-employee exclusion is valid, and it has, this court has held that it's valid. It's a valid exclusion. Gorzowski dealt with whether or not, for public policy reasons, you could basically have a co-employee exclusion in an auto policy issued to a motor vehicle handler. That was the issue in Gorzalski. I think Gorzalski was correctly decided. I think if you look at Don, the court examines the public policy factors involved. Don basically says, look, there's a workers' compensation exclusion that basically excludes coverage for the employer, and there's a fellow employee exclusion that excludes coverage for the employee. They're both in the same shoes, and then there's workers' compensation available here, and then you also have a $25,000 statutory limit under the policy for the auto.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Smith?
Thank you. That's a very interesting discussion. I believe Justice Rogenstack and Justice Bradley have accurately described the conditions under which General Casualty's policy will provide coverage. The endorsement is an endorsement for the use of customer autos on their premises. It does provide coverage specifically by identifying a car wash as one of those entities which eliminates the auto exclusion in the CGL policy. The issue of whether a co-employee is entitled to receive the benefits of that liability coverage is really decided by whether the Gorzalski decision was correctly decided. And Gorzalski was decided based upon Dom, but Dom was decided before the motor vehicle handler statutes were enacted. And that's where I have difficulty believing that Gorzalski was correctly decided. 632.32.6a, the clear and express prohibition against doing exactly what General Casualty is attempting to do in this case was not an issue in Dom. It was an issue in Gorzalski. The court should have respected that prohibition in Gorzalski, and that's why it was wrongly decided. The other issue is, Justice Prosser pointed out, what kind of insurance company is going to insure a motor vehicle handler? Is it going to be a personal auto insurer? No, it's going to be a commercial general liability insurer, a garage policy insurer. Those types of insurers are going to cover entities such as motor vehicle handlers. That's why I don't agree with this argument that 632.32.2b, 632.32.5a, 5B and 5C and 632.32.6A can't apply to commercial general liability insurers. It's just not practical. Those types of insurers are going to be the exact kind of insurers that insure entities that handle motor vehicles. Certainly somebody could buy business auto coverage, but the CGL policy at issue in this case specifically recognizes that employees are going to operate customer autos, and that's why the endorsement is written into the policy.
But the endorsement was written into the policy not to cover the, it was only to cover third persons. But you're saying that this court would have to overturn the Gorzalski case in order to get coverage under this particular endorsement? Is that what you're saying?
Gorzalski stands in the way.
But I mean, so if I were the buyer of the policy, there's always doubt that they read them, but let's say they did. They read the policy, and yes, you have an endorsement, and we are covered when they drive, but that's only if they hit me as I'm standing there with a card at the end to give them the card to get in my car. I'm the third party. It wouldn't cover somebody like Mr. Rocker.
Unfortunately, I don't believe that the endorsement can be read that narrowly. What we have in the CGL policy is a blanket auto exclusion for the operation of autos. What the endorsement does is takes away that auto exclusion. And what it also does, though, is it doesn't address the definitional exclusion of employees, the co-employee exclusion. So I think that the endorsement can be read to simply take away the blanket auto exclusion and have it apply in all circumstances involving the use of a customer's auto. I don't agree that it says anything about third parties. because it doesn't say anything about third parties. What it does is it removes that exclusion for automobile use within the CGL policy. Grozalski respects the co-employee decision, the co-employee exclusion in that narrow context in the face and contrary to 632.32.6a, which also is not limited to simply claims by third parties. It says nothing about that.
Counsel has argued that once 632.32 is applied to the general casualty policy, everything in the statute comes in. And how do you answer that?
You're anticipating the next thing I was hoping to discuss. And my answer to that is that the court's decision in this case does not have to address whether UM coverage or UIM coverage or medical payments coverage or blood relative coverage must be provided. I think that what the court can do is look at motor vehicle handler language and just those four provisions of 632.32 and say that it has to apply to CGL policies. It has to apply to the types of insurers. Those four provisions have to apply to the types of insurers that are going to be issuing policies to motor vehicle handlers. You can leave for another day the issue of whether UM, UIM coverage, or medical payments coverage, or any other type of coverage has to be mandated by that section. And that's what I urge the court to do, frankly.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Treshek.
What we see, and I think what the justices have seen and questioned General Casualty Counsel about, is this policy becomes the ultimate shell game. You've got coverage here, but you don't have it here. Well, you have it here, but not over here. And you've got it when you're using a customer's auto, but not if you're a fellow and co-employee. I mean, it's the ultimate shell game. The endorsements that are set forth on page 9 of our brief clearly establish that General Casualty insured for this precise risk. They lay out, 1, auto repair service shops, 2, car washes, 3, gasoline stations, 4, tire dealers, 5, automobile quick lubrication services. And then in B in that section, it says customer's auto means an auto on those premises for the purpose of receiving the services normally provided in connection with those businesses, but does not include an auto owned or rented to any insured. So clearly, this is precisely the risk that General Casualty had envisioned when they add that endorsement. It all comes down to this house of cards that's rested on one single card, the fellow co-employee exclusion. And that leads us to Grozalski. Grozalski, in its most critical point near the end of the decision, quotes Dom. And it says, quote, the purpose of a fellow employee exclusion clause is to leave an employee who is injured by an employer's motor vehicle being operated by a fellow employee. Now, that was right under Dom. Under Dom, the circumstances were they were injured on because of a forklift owned by the employer. Right? Here, that's not true. This is not a vehicle owned by the employer. This is a vehicle owned by a customer. And under 10203 sub 2, this is the precise exception to the exclusivity of workers' comp. So you have to read this policy in conjunction with the clear indication of the legislature. Well, why do they put that exception, that very narrow exception in the workers' comp statute that allows a co-employee to make a claim against a fellow co-employee when they're using a motor vehicle not owned or leased by the employer? Well, for this precise reason, to provide compensation to a co-employee when they're hurt in the course of their employment by the use of a motor vehicle not owned or leased by the employer. So, and, you know, although counsel for General Casualty says Grozalski was argued or decided correctly, I don't know how that can be said. I don't know how you can argue that Bob Token, Pontiac or Buick, whatever the dealership was, doesn't squarely fit one of the enumerated sections of 632. So for that reason, I do believe Gorzelski is wrongly decided, and General Casualty does need to provide coverage for Mr. Rocker's injuries. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Indeed, thank all three of you for an excellent argument on complex insurance company policies. We didn't deal with reasonable expectations of the policyholder. That'll be for another case. That concludes our arguments in 2004 AP 356, Rocker versus USAA Casualty Insurance Company et al. We'll take a few minutes recess so that the students who wish to leave may do so, and the other students may enter the chambers. We're in recess for a few minutes.